Welcome to Outspoken, a storytelling event in which all speakers identify as LGBTQ. The story you are about to hear was recorded live in front of a storytelling audience at Sidetrack in Chicago. Outspoken. Retell. Relive. Relate. Now, here's our story.
We're thrilled to have Clark Rogers. Clark, come on up.
When I was 5 years old, my mother asked me for the first time if I was gay. She prefaced this by explaining to me what gay was. I once heard a TED talk where an expert described language as a parasite to which our brains have evolved to accommodate. When thought of this way, we see language as an idea that uses humans as a host to proliferate itself. Catherine, my mother, was a verbose and open woman. She was also a medical professional. So when she discussed this topic in the year 1993 with her effeminate son, she wanted to make sure to steer this parasite in the right direction. Clark, do you know what gay is? It's when two men stick their penises in each other's butts and they get diarrhea. You're not gay, are you? Later, in April, I only have 10 minutes. Later in April of 2014, I asked her what her first memory of a gay man was. She told me about her choir director when she was a chubby little Katie in a college town Catholic church in the Ozarks, Tom Correll. He had a friend, a loaded word for us. She used the term with nuance that we mutually understood. Friends are so valuable to gay men. In the 1965 Southern Churches of the Ozark Mountains, to a gay man, friends were the stuff of dreams. And a friend, the dream of a friend, a quiet, silent romance that began with locked eyes and racing hearts in a grocery store, the lips of a man who wants to hold your hand at every moment and shifts the weight of your too large mattress in a pink and white balance. A friend to us has meant more than anything else in the whole world. The isolation of rural LGBT people causes a loneliness so vast that you never forget it. They died together in a car in 1979, killed by a train. They were spared by AIDS. They had a happy ending. Neither one of them had to lose the other. You're not gay, are you? I wonder if she thought of them when she asked me this question. Probably not, to be honest. She had likely forgotten them, traded images of lonely choir directors with dirty, hairy magazines stuffed under mattresses for wheezing skeletons under sky blue death blankets, hospitals, gazes of disbelief. She now saw that disbelief on her child's face, the disbelief of someone who was just asked if they gave men diarrhea by placing their penis in men's behinds at the age of 5. No, Mom, I firmly denied the question. Of course I wasn't gay. Gay didn't exist, or at least didn't exist for me yet. She didn't tell me that being gay meant that you wanted to touch the furry chests of your parents' car mechanic. Both of their mechanics. And also construction workers. Some family friends, and Joey from Blossom. I can't look at my best friend after having said that. Had Catherine said, do you think about hairy, muscular men naked and being with them naked? I would have replied, well, I mean, who can say? Maybe I would have known that it was wrong and lied. Wrong. But I certainly would not have been so incredulous as I was at this very moment. There's a deeper context to this instance. Catherine was a goddamn medical professional. In 1993, Kinsey's study about male sexuality had been available to the public since goddamn 1948. 45 goddamn years weren't enough to penetrate yet the minds of the medical community who held so steadfastly to this concept of depravity, sexual deviance as a form of psychotic rebellion, one that had resulted in millions of deaths and loss. You see, 1948 was such an important year for all of us who listened to LGBT voices with the silence and reverence of this room. World War II ended in 1947, and the events of World War II set up a perilous stack that governments and civilians alike would lose sleep over for the next 40 years. Stalin's Russia won World War II. Plain and simple. The myth was that the golden Western New World, USA, had claimed the prize. The truth was more sobering. We owed a sociopath world peace. At one point during World War II, during an effort to reclaim Poland from the nationalist German occupation, Stalin's army allowed Poland's army to be decimated. The Russians held back when they were meant to advance. It is likely that Stalin did this to make Poland's army vulnerable for a later conquest by his army. This was not a man who valued human life. So in 1948, the same year that Kinsey released his study on male sexuality, and 45 years before my mother inquired about the sexuality of her five-year-old, when Stalin said, and I paraphrase here, that in a world where capitalism exists, there cannot exist world peace, the leaders of the Western free world interpreted this to mean a threat of future war. And thus, World War II birthed a cold, quiet, silent child, the Cold War. And with it, paranoia, panic, terror at the threat of communism was also born. I'm going to pause for a moment because I realize that I'm talking about many things here, and I want you all to be able to stay with me. Up until right now, there are two most important years to my story. 1993, where in spite of AIDS, and in the midst of it, I'm 5 years old and a fucking faggot. And 1948, where Stalin says that peace cannot coexist in a world with capitalism, and Kinsey has released his study on male sexuality. Kinsey's study on male sexuality contained many statistics about homosexual activity between two men, and it is a book that inspired countless of our brethren in a fight to be respected as human. It was the first scientific study which showed that homosexual sentiment or thoughts were rather common, and that homosexual activity was very common, and finally that homosexual identity was much more common than previously thought. But in the context of 1948, a changing world where Roosevelt's New Deals were beginning to be overshadowed by old hands, where human values of empathy were taking a backseat to nationalistic pride and economic policy, and a thriving economy was benefiting off the groundwork of a suburban revolution that would leave poor people behind in vacuous cities. Kinsey's words that inspired so many of us also were twisted and used against us. Homosexuals, it was finally proven, like communists, were invisible and among us. Later, in 1948, President Eisenhower would sign into law the Miller Act, which targeted homosexuals, naming us a threat to national security. Sodomy was now an act punishable by up to 20 years in prison. If you were accused of sodomy, you were required to undergo a psych evaluation with no due process, no judge, no jury, just a biased, nervous conversation that was more determined by the skin color and wealth of your parents than by one's actual sexual activity. If you were found to be a homosexual, also, by the way, in 1948, homosexual was a blanket term that was used to also include transgender and bisexual individuals. If you were found to be homosexual, you were admitted to a psychiatric facility. If your parents could not afford a nice facility where you were abused less often, then you would be sent to a state facility where you would be abused more often. A common treatment of homosexuals was Annectin, a muscle relaxant that caused shortness of breath. While the patient was choking, a medical professional would explain that if they did not stop being homosexual, they would die. It was attempted fear conversion. Other treatments were shock therapy, castration, lobotomies with an ice pick continued until the mid-50s. After that, you were just drugged with Thorazine. It was called the chemical lobotomy, I believe, trapped in a chemical prison of sedation. This continued widespread in the 1970s, in the United States until the 1970s, all because we were seen as a threat to national security. This is gruesome, this is unpleasant, and this is our history, and this is our culture because it is our history. And while it is not our fault, it is our responsibility to know it. Because political borders aren't real, and on this same earth where we stand, some mother who is a medical professional is telling her child lies about being homosexual in order to scare them away from being true to themselves. Back in 1993, when Catherine, in her blue Suburban, wanted to protect her son, would she have tried the different means of protection if she had known the violence that we had endured? When I asked her about this, and if she knew about it, she did not. When I talk to gay men here today in this bar, if they know about it, they do not. They don't know. I didn't know until last year. We have more to lose now than we have ever had to lose in our entire collective history. We are brethren, and we must take action to educate ourselves and each other. I haven't scratched the surface into the horrors we have faced together, and yet they go so much deeper and are happening right now as I'm saying this. Our youth, those bright-eyed 21-year-old children who are entering bars now to douse their confusing pasts in alcohol, as many of us have done, their parents were ignorant to our history. They know nothing, and it is our fault. It is my fault. When I was 12 years old, Will and Grace was on my television once a week. When I was 14, I watched Jeffrey, The Broken Hearts Club, and other fluffy romantic comedies about gay life in the 2000s. Why is it that I went until last week at the age of 29 without knowing that when the labor prisoners of Nazi Germany were released, homosexuals were kept behind bars? My parents were total dicks about me being gay, and I more or less lived in fear of them disowning me for it. If I had known that they were contributing to a long history of violence against LGBT people, maybe I would not have felt so alone. Maybe I wouldn't have taken it sitting down. But I know for sure that if they had known, they would not have tried to willfully bully me in order to quote-unquote protect me. The reality is that, as members of this community, we are reborn again and again. Today I am 29. Today I am 14. Today I am 5. If we own each other in this way and we preserve our memory through history, maybe we can ensure a better future and in that way undo the sufferings of our collective past. Thank you so much.
This has been Outspoken. Outspoken is curated by David Fink and is hosted by Kim L. Hunt and Art Johnston. Audio production is by Ray Teresi. Music by Josh McLean. General manager of Sidetrack is me, Brad Bailoff. Outspoken is a storytelling event with speakers from the LGBTQ community and is recorded live in front of an audience at the legendary Sidetrack in Boys Town of Chicago. To find out more about Outspoken, go to SidetrackChicago.com. Outspoken. Retell. Relive. Relate. Thank you for listening.